is going on out there, everybody? And thank you all so very, very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And joining me, as always, is Overheated Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios on a beautiful July day, getting ready for my summer vacation. I haven't been on a vacation in quite some time, unlike my wife, who goes on vacation like once a month, it seems like.
To get away from you.
I understand. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And of course, when it comes to going out of town, it comes with a whole lot of stuff, right?
Oh, it's always something, yeah.
Always get super busy right before vacation. Everybody I know has been kind of cruising through the summer. I can't believe summer's almost always are already over, but all of a sudden I got a whole bunch on my plate, and it seems like it happens every time that I want to get out of town. But we're looking forward to it. We're going to go to the coast, we're going to do some fishing, sunbathing, and just generally hanging out and not doing any work. I've got a couple books I'm going to take with me I plan on reading, so I am looking forward to it. Luke's looking forward to it, the big boys are looking for it, it's a good time.
Nice.
You know what I like the most is that it's not too far away.
That's true.
Like when you drive like really far on a good skiing trip and stuff, well, you're excited to go there, but on the way home it's like, oh, I just want to get home. And then you're like tired for two more days, right?
You need more time off.
It's only like 5 hours from here, so it's pretty easy. I drive more than 5 hours every day just doing my job. So yeah, I'm used to it. Preload some podcasts. I'm good to go.
Hit the Buc-ee's on the way by.
Every day.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Our kids have been going to the movies and stuff all the time. I know we got the new Ninja Turtles movie coming out that Luke wants to go see.
Oh, yeah.
What about you? What have you been up to?
Recovery, baby. Feeling like a champ.
That's
finally
right.
Getting to where I feel a little bit better. Still have a few more checkups I'm going to have to go do. But other than that, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I had to mention to the people at Audio Boom that we were going to miss an episode last week because, like, you just haven't been feeling yourself.
Dude, it was so bad.
Because of the heat stroke, and it's a real thing. And I know it hurts a lot of people who are out in the heat. You got to be careful. Heck, it even kills some folks when the, like, power grid goes out.
Yeah, it would have killed a mortal man.
Yeah, it's rough, but I'm glad you're feeling better.
Shook it off. Well, I can't really say shook it off, but I am. I'm feeling much, much better.
That's good.
It's crazy. It's, you know what it is? It's one of those things they always talk about. Like, your health is the most important thing, and you don't realize it until something affects it.
Well,
and then you're like, what?
I think the older you get, the closer to death you get to, you start thinking about stuff like
dude,
that
I
more.
Do now.
When you're in your 20s, like you're like, vitamins, who needs vitamins?
Yeah. Water, what's water?
Speaking of water, it's your favorite week of the year. It's Shark Week. I know that you've been glued to the TV.
My wife and my daughter.
They love it, huh?
My wife never misses it.
Mine doesn't either.
Dude, she's been a shark junkie since the day I met her. Like that, she's always liked it. I think they're ridiculous, but yeah, I don't watch that stuff.
I don't like it because it's terrifying.
Well, that's one reason, yeah.
My wife likes she likes sharks. She likes serial killers. It's like, what is it?
Look who she lives with.
It's insane. And my mother, she makes crazy claims like, hey, I was watching Shark Week.
Crazy claims.
And I saw that there was a shark, bunch of sharks near Orange Beach in Alabama. Can you believe that? And I'm like, Mom, if there's salt water, there's sharks.
You know that?
Yeah,
they
I can believe it,
that.
Right? Like, what do they think? They don't know not to go up in that river?
Don't go near Alabama.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We're swimming
of
up
course.
Near Florida. Don't go near Alabama.
Of course there
crazy
is.
Crazy claims.
I am kind of tired of Shark Week, though. Like, it's like they recycle the same show. They just come out with, like, one new episode per
and now
year.
There's like a, what is it, National Geographic?
Yeah,
does it
they're
too.
Copying them. They're copying them. You'd be original again.
They're
copying Discovery
and
Channel. Discovery Channel's been doing it for like 20 years. Nat Geo's got to get on their action. They air it 1 week earlier. You know, that's like 6 minute abs, you know, 5 minute abs.
I love it that they're having shark offs.
Yeah, just trying to one up.
It's my favorite thing to watch this shark competition, but I found something I need to tell you about. So first of all, you know, Lon sends us great stuff. We've sent Lon a bunch of wild stuff. It's great, right? I love it when he sends them to you before he even posts them. So it's like he's intentionally trying to freak you out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why? And why has he got to send them to me at like midnight, too? Like, I think he programs it and then goes to bed just so he knows he's going to drop it so I can check it and see and get freaked out. This is one that came in this week. I got to read this to y'all. Some forest rangers had a little encounter, and it instantly made me think of Kyle because it was a tall, dog-like bipedal cryptid in the Great Smoky Mountains.
Okay.
Yeah. So get a load of this. It says, hi. It says, right after I graduated from college in Colorado, I was hired by the National Park Service, so I soon relocated to eastern Tennessee and started working as a ranger in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Beautiful up there.
Since I was newly hired, to the job, I was assigned to patrolling and doing routine safety checks. This allowed me to roam around this huge, beautiful park. That makes sense, right? New guy, get to know the park, first of all.
Yeah.
What best way to do it besides patrol it? So a few weeks into my employment, I received a call reporting unknown animal tracks and activity all around this site. So when I got there and saw that there was, I thought, one of the other rangers was just messing around. See, there were tracks, but they weren't recognizable. These tracks were human-shaped and were huge with talons.
Mm.
So I checked out the area and took a few photographs and then helped the family get back together and find another campsite. I later turned over the photos to my supervisor, expecting him to laugh and come clean on the joke, but instead he got upset, thinking I was playing a prank. So I asked him to accompany me to the site, but by the time we could get out there, the rain had washed away the prints. So a few weeks later, I received another strange call. A campsite had been completely destroyed. The tents shredded and everything just trashed. The campers weren't there at the time of the incident. There weren't any footprints observed either, but since it was in the dry area, that's kind of what I chalked it up to. Now, I found two tufts of brown hair and fur on the ground. And on this occasion, my supervisor saw the destruction for himself, but recorded it simply as bear activity. The fur and hair didn't look anything like that of a bear. 2 months later, in early September, I received a call about a lost pet. The young couple had been walking their dog, but it had slipped off its collar and ran off into the woods. They were very upset about this lost dog, so myself and five other rangers were told to search the woods and recover the dog. So we started our search in three pairs. After we walked for hours, covering the area and didn't see any sign of the dog, it was late in the day and we hadn't received any other calls, so we agreed to stay out until dark before returning to the parking lot. Now, as the sun set, we turned around and headed for the nearest trail. There was only another half hour of daylight remaining, and we'd felt sorry for not finding this dog, but there really was nothing else we could do. So as we walked on the trail, heading back to the parking lot, we heard growling sounds. Now, we had bear spray with us if we needed it, but it was almost dusk and really hard to see. We couldn't identify the source of the sound, so we continued walking, hoping to leave this bear behind. One of the other rangers pointed out a tree that looked mauled. There were huge scratch marks and missing branches, like a black bear would do. So I used my flashlight to look at the base of the tree. There were the same huge, human-like footprints I had seen several months ago. These prints were definitely not from a bear. So I told the other rangers about the clawed footprints that I had seen previously. The look on their faces was chilling, and their apprehension was obvious. See, as we discussed these prints, we heard crashing and grunting sounds nearby, so we kept moving, but faster. I twice saw a dark shape run past us to our right, but the trees made it impossible to see what it was in detail. The other rangers noticed it all as well. It was very bulky and tall, which concerned each of us. Then, without warning, the creature lunged out of the woods onto the trail about 50 feet in front of us. I could see a dog-like face in the twilight as it loudly growled. All six of us scattered into the surrounding woods. Now, I tripped on a tree branch, hit my head on a nearby tree, and was dazed for a few minutes. But I kept my eyes open in hopes that this creature would not attack me. Several minutes later, we called out to each other and eventually gathered back on the trail. The beast must have ran off. We didn't hear any further growls or crashing sounds. We quickly ran along the path and arrived at our trucks in the parking lot, got in the trucks, and raced back to the ranger station. The next day, each of us was told to write a written report about the search for the dog. I recorded exactly what we had encountered, and as far as I know, the other rangers did as well. But our supervisor never mentioned the incident again. And by the way, the lost dog was found unharmed 2 days later. Thanks, Tim.
Wow.
So.
Creepy, but an interesting story.
Why does it seem, though, like once you get to a certain level in this parks and you know, all the park stuff, and it's almost like you know. Right. Yeah. It's almost like they had talked about when they said that the general or whatever, the colonel had seen the UFO footage, didn't seem surprised. You see some of these higher ups doesn't really seem surprised. And it's like they actively do their part to make sure nobody knows.
Yeah, I think they're not surprised because they know.
Sure,
they've been read into these certain programs where they know about this stuff. And there's a lot of activity in the Smoky Mountains. You know, you can detail that in it's detailed in the 411 books by David Politis and stuff like that. There's a lot of cool stories that come from that area of the world. Not just to mention that area has a lot of mines and caves and stuff like that. When I think of Tennessee, when I think of West Virginia, when I think of Kentucky, I always think of this vast cave system, cavern system that's underground, where there's these strange, whether it's ant people, dog man, rakes, whatever, but there's these different creatures that live in there.
And take you underworld.
Like Gollum and stuff. Yeah, I like to think that's real. I don't know that it is, but that's where I like to think where a lot of these stories come from, right? Speaking of stories, and especially here on Expanded Perspectives, we get a lot of Glimmer Man sightings. This one happens to be in a national park up in British Columbia. Check this out, Cam. It says, in September 2002, I was living in my camper truck at the top of the McNair Creek Valley near Port Mellon, British Columbia. This guy was overlanding, right? One foggy morning, I climbed up into the old growth and wandered around eating blueberries and just listening. Right? Why does stuff always happen when people are eating or picking berries? But I've talked about it before. I won't even pick up raspberries at the grocery store. I make my wife do it.
Right?
Because of this phenomenon. It says, I had my sturdy hiking stick with me, but was not even carrying bear spray or a handgun. After a few hours, I headed back to my camp. I had to walk down a steep scree field at the base of which was my front bumper. Carefully, slowly, step by step, I descended the wobbly boulders on my wobbly ankles. Wobble, baby. Remember we were singing that? We were listening to that before we got in here today.
It's true.
I stepped off the last boulder onto a flat old road surface just in front of my truck. When I raised my eyes, I saw that some scraggly bushes about 6 to 8 feet away were shaking or vibrating. I thought there must be some squirrels fighting in there. That is the only thing that can make bushes vibrate and move like that. I stepped forward a little and poked my stick into the branches to separate them some. Suddenly, the shaking area grew to a larger area, 3 feet in diameter. Then this area of violently vibrating bushes moved away from me and accelerated up the steep slope. Out of curiosity, I tried to follow it, looking into the hole it was making in the vegetation, but there was nothing in the hole. The running hole in the forest displaced vegetation in the shape of a tall, bipedal, hefty creature. It went up that steep slope as fast as the fastest running man you could have ever imagined was going up. It disappeared from my sight over the top of the slope. Wow, I thought, I just saw an invisible Sasquatch, and I had it only 2 feet away from me. I must have poked it in the shin with my stick. Perhaps it was afraid of me. I write this for the other people who have experienced the Predator, or Glimmer Man. That's what we call it. From the many accounts I have read and heard, this thing is something different from a Sasquatch. From reading many accounts, it might be an alien or something else with cloaking and anti-gravitic technology. It seems to like to watch people, and it likes to run through the forest and the trees. Thanks, Big Jim. Crazy story, right?
Dude.
It was literally right in front of me. He didn't know because it was cloaked, and then the thing just ran up the steep slope.
Oh.
What is it?
I love it. The whole, everything about the Glimmer Man stuff, I love.
But what, does it seem to you like the stories are increasing?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, is it my imagination? But it just seems like more and more people are seeing it.
And I don't know if it's because that like the interactions are increasing or if it's just the knowledge alone and people are more apt to maybe look for a little bit finer detail.
Do you think it's like a time traveler? Like it's somebody that's come back or from another time. And when they come back, they're like in between universes, parallel multiverses, you know what I mean? And you buy a package and for $10 more, we'll cloak you. And you can like spy on people.
I think it has to be something that's not quite, I don't want to use the word advanced because that's not what it is. It doesn't act the way our society acts or the way any human species of society acts. We're not hiding in trees. Right. We're not.
Well, I agree. I don't think it's a. I don't think it's a person with some cool.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Man like scientist created awesome some special that cloaking would camouflage, and he goes, "No, because it's too dangerous. It's they're in people's houses. They're in cities. They're in forests. You know, and if you were to kill one, then you would have that technology. It's too big of a risk. I think. I think it's something.
Yeah.
I think it's either demonic, or it's some kind of like. Crossover between parallel universes or something. I don't know why I think that.
I think it's always been there, and we've just now started taking notice of it the last few, maybe the last couple decades or something like that.
Well, we've talked about it all the time. The guy that created the Predator movie, one of the people working on that show was J. Allen Hynek's like son or nephew or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe he was told something which inspired the.
Well, and we've got stories that come from way prior
before
to that
the movie. Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it is. I think about it along those deals is the very first time I'd ever heard it spoken about the connections between Bigfoot and UFOs is it may not be massive. Like there may not be a massive connection, but there's enough of them happening here and there that stuff like that could happen. So that's kind of the way it feels like this is like this stuff may have always been here. We just didn't have a big enough sample pool to really pull from to start pulling it in. It feels like that. This would explain how things can vanish when people are hunting them or chasing them or, you know, trying to find any of that. This, to me, would explain that.
But I will say the one thing that's common in all these sightings, which is very odd, and I don't have any reason why. If you want to see a UFO, smoke a cigarette. If you want to see Sasquatch or a Glimmer Man, pick berries.
Yep.
I don't know why, but it's like the berry picking. Do you think, and this is crazy.
All right,
Do you think that picking berries, like it annoys Bigfoot or say it's the Fae and they're like, hey, that's ours. And so when you're doing that, you're actually disturbing them because they're like, that's all. We're druids. That's ours. You're stealing our berries.
I think
so
that's it's why more like that.
I think come it's abduct more you or mess with you.
Yeah, I think it's more the Fae that I think you're messing around with something that they deem belongs to them.
And maybe it does belong to them. Maybe they planted obviously. Those berries there and they've been cultivating them for years and you're just walking in there.
That's a great point. I mean, we can speculate all we want, but let's say that the Fae do exist. They do live extreme amounts of time compared to us.
Yeah.
Truly what we go, oh, look at the wild plums. Maybe they're not wild. Maybe those were actually planted and taken care of 1,000 years ago or 200 years ago by some Fae, and that family is still doing it.
And that's what, just like if some stranger walked in your backyard and started picking your tomatoes, you'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Right? I mean, I know birds are going to carry a lot of, animals are going to carry a lot of it off, but then again, maybe some of it was actually set there by the Fae. They don't mind sharing it with the birds and you start seeing the wild plums and all the butterflies and all that. They just don't want us grabbing.
Well, you can, but you have to like offer a gift first, right? Like
this
you have
is
to
true.
Be like a mutual trade kind of thing.
This
so
is
before
true.
You go pick berries, offer them a gift. Leave some tobacco out. What else do they like? I don't know.
They got sugars, salts, all that. You know what? This is a great
like sugar cubes.
Sugar cubes. Let's take a quick break. We're just going to take a break. We're going to jump into it. I'm going to get into some stories with Bigfoot that are going to end up talking about gifting areas with them. So it's a roundabout area. You'll kind of pick up what I'm talking about when we wrap it up to the end. I think you're going to enjoy it, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. To put this other than to just come out and say it. I love Bigfoot, right? I love it. Now, listen, it does change for me. Like we always make jokes about, it does change. It does change from day to day and time to time what I feel about it. And if I believe it's real, it's literally daily, right? Like it's one day I wake up, next day, no way. But it doesn't stop the fact that I truly enjoy the whole idea of it. The idea, like daydreaming, right? Just thinking about what could be out there if this is real. Personally, I like to believe that there is a secret cabal of either military or government or behind the scenes, whatever it is. and that they know it's real and that they are actively trying to cover it up, right? Like for some reason, I don't know. I love that kind of stuff. And the older I get, the more I lean into where it's just, I like the fun of it, right? Because I don't believe we're ever going to get to the bottom of it. I believe if it was truly something that we could get to the bottom of, we would have already done it. It would have already been a thing and we would have been past it, or we would have been researching and studying it even more than we are now. So that's part of it. That's part of it, the way I feel like maybe it's not there. And then other parts of me are like, no, it's there because simply of stories like Yucca Man. Right now, I love the stories of the Yucca Man. For those of you that aren't familiar, it comes from the 29 Palms Marine Base there in Cali, right? It is great. And there's always the same story. A Marine, young fella, alone in the dark, sent out to this area to patrol or to keep watch. And he's got his gun. He's got all of this stuff, his flashlight. He hears something. Right? Something alerts him to its presence. He moves in to investigate. During the investigation, he gets his lights on this giant woolly beast, like an 8-footer. Either it strikes him, right? The stories are, oh, it attacked. Or this young Marine just all of a sudden passes out from fear and from shock. Down he goes, wakes up only to find that, like, he doesn't have his gun anymore, or the gun's broken, or whatever it is. There's always this stuff that goes on with these Yucca Man stories. Now, we know, and as we've covered before that y'all have listened to, that we have stories that come from military men and women that have reached out to us and left us their tales. So I believe, now, of course, you know, not every story, right? Like, you can't believe all of them, but there is basis. There is a foundation in truth where a lot of this comes from. Now, yeah, of course, after time, it may have been carried away. It's just the way we do things, right? It's how we get. We never let the truth stand in the way of a good story, right? But we do know that these stories take place all over the world at all different military bases. Why military bases? I don't know. And we've covered a lot of this in the past. But this is just one of those tales that I truly enjoy with the Yucca Man as such. That's not where it stops, though. Now, y'all remember, I don't remember what episode it was. It wasn't that long ago, I don't believe, where I had talked about the military group that tracked down what looked like a mother and child Sasquatch, and that they were basically forced into eliminating this target. We've also discussed where there were a training mission there in the mountains. Over 3,000 Marines involved, only for it to get canceled, only for something strange to happen and it to get canceled. So we know that there's some awkward, odd things that may be going on in and around the military. One of my favorites, just to kind of offshoot a little bit, one of my favorite military stories, aside from the rock apes of Vietnam, that's still all the stories that take place over there in Vietnam and what they found over there is really interesting. But this is right up there with it. And y'all probably remember we've covered it a while back, but I believe this was back, I want to say 2002, I believe, was when this allegedly took place. And I can't remember now, to be honest. Maybe it wasn't even that long ago. Maybe it was like, man, it was recent. Let's say it was in the 2000s, from 2010 to now. It was somewhere, let's just say, right around in there. But all of y'all probably remember the Afghan giant. Remember the tales of the team's members going in Kandahar and encountering like a 12-foot tall, or bigger, but like a 12-foot tall man that weighed like over 1,000 pounds, giant red beard, real pasty skin, long red hair, 6 fingers, 6 toes. They came in, it came out, had like a spear or a pike of some sort, stabs one of the guys, right? Kills some of them. They ended up gunning him down only to have the chopper show up and drop a big net, and it gathered them up and lifted them off. And they had remembered talking to all of these military guys, talked to one another, asking about what they had seen and being debriefed, and also talking about, like, to the helicopter pilot. I remember one incident was him talking, like, the helicopter pilot knew the size of whatever this thing was that they had, like this base, this almost like a I guess you would call it a pallet of some sort, but it was like a certain size. Like, I believe it was like a 12 by 12 or 10 by 12 or something, and this thing was curled up on it, like laying on its side, like a fetal position, I guess, kind of curled up on it, all wrapped up in that, and took up the entire thing. So imagine being so big, you're like a 10-footer on your side, right? That's a pretty good size. But anyway, either way, it's the idea of the giant, right? It's the idea of the military involved in something, and this giant attacks. Again, I don't know why. I don't know what it is about it, but I do thoroughly enjoy those stories. There was another one that took place, as long as we're going to stay along some military Bigfoot. I don't remember if I discussed this. I know this took place way back in the day. I believe the actual story came like off of Beyond the Darkness Radio. I believe it was Dave, Mr. Schrader, that actually reported on this. Believe was who it was. I believe somebody had called in or wrote in or whatnot. But this took place, supposed to be in the early 90s. I'll read you what we got here. It says, in the early 1990s, I was with the teams in the Navy. We were sanctioned by an alphabet government agency to put a stop to several aggressive Sasquatch in the high country in western northern Carolina. That's right, folks. North Carolina. Here we go. We all thought it was a joke. So at the mission briefing, you know, we're all making jokes about it with each other. But turns out this is no joke. Now, my partner in our team of 12 was my swim buddy. This fellow was a Native American. And as far as I know, this man wasn't scared of anything right then, right? Who do y'all picture? I picture Billy from Predator, right? It ain't no man, Major. Like, that's who I think this is. So Billy's not scared of anything, right? Billy's ready to rock. Says, before we were ordered to go out and during this briefing, all of the agents were showing us slides, photos of what these creatures did to the people in this area. It claims that there were adults that were attacked and children that were attacked, damage done to homes as well as vehicles. Says he looks over at Billy, at his swim buddy, his Native American buddy. He said, this guy is white as a sheet, just totally afraid. Like, you can see fear on him. He looks at him and he says, dude, this is bad. Billy said, this is really bad. So he goes on to say, when we arrived in this little mountain village town, the sheriff met us there. And he told us that he had never been so happy to see the cavalry since he himself was a military man and actually served in Korea. So he showed us the actual places where, as he put it, this is where those big hairy demons destroyed all of this stuff. Or killed them, him or her, whatever. Said it was bad. It was as bad as what we thought. Says, so my buddy was taking everything in like I had never seen him do before, absorbing it like a sponge. And after talking with the sheriff, our lieutenant told us to fire up because we're all going hunting. So as we're getting our gear ready, my buddy said to me, you know, I always thought my grandfather was just telling me stories to scare me about what he and his brothers did and when they fought off these wild men. Turns out it wasn't really a story. Says we started in around 1400, and by 1600, we had found lots and lots of tracks. That part right there sets me aside, right? They go out, they've already found them. They've already located tracks, and they are on it this quick. Seems pretty easy, whatever these things were, to be sending it out. Now, I got some questions I'll bring up, some things to point out later. But anyhow, says, so we start tracking them, and we made out at least 7 different individuals. Yeah, 7 of them, y'all. We made first contact around 1930, and it was almost dark. The point man stopped dead in his tracks and spoke into his headset. I see one. It's huge. The lieutenant goes forward to say that if you have the shot, take it. So he shot this massive beast with a 7.62, right? He says this thing acts like a mosquito bit him. The creature spins around, lets out this blood-curdling roar. And of course, at this point, the point man goes full auto. Boom. This time, the creature dropped like a rock. So apparently, he cuts loose quite a few bursts of the 7.62 and even puts him down at this point. After first contact, the agents radioed in and said that they wanted one alive. The lieutenant said, that's not going to happen. It took 3 days and nights with almost no sleep, but we killed all 7 of them. We found the missing people, or rather what was left of them. We had one casualty when a team member was snatched straight up into a tree. There was nothing anyone could have done for him. And to this day, thinking of those 3 days sends chills down my spine. You won't find those 3 days in any military record or mission log. And going into our mission debriefing were normally where we were asked 1,001 questions about every shot fired, every angle we fired from, every angle we fired on, etc. We were simply told that the past 3 days, we were doing a rigorous mountain training, and during that training period, we lost a man. And with that, the debriefing team stood up and walked out. Now, normally we have individual debriefing for the whole team, but this was the one and only time it was just the team. So to answer your next question, after 3 days, government agents came in, removed all 7 corpses, and flew them out. That is this fella's story. That's it. So what I was talking about was, so this fella knows, his teammate knows, they seem to be onto something, they go, they start tracking. This always sparks, this story simply sparked an idea in my mind of what we had talked about with missing people and missing 411, is they would bring in the military and they seem to know exactly where to go. They seem to know exactly where to start, where to find these tracks, how to track them down, how to locate these missing people, creatures, whatever it is. Now, I'm not saying that there's a specialty team of just like bad individuals of SEALs and Rangers and Green Berets and all this stuff that make up this Sasquatch termination team, our tracking team or whatever it is. I personally like to believe that that's a thing. I don't know about y'all, but of course, it's the romantic idea. Now, I don't like the idea of gunning them down, but let's just say this. If CWD, chronic wasting disease, could hit a whitetail, right, can spread through elk and mule deer, whatnot, is there any, and of course, you know, we don't know, but is there anything like that that maybe Bigfoot gets? Maybe it's not just like us. Maybe it is susceptible to other diseases, other things that could happen. Maybe that's what it is that led these to be more aggressive. We hear tales from time to time, not often, but from time to time about aggressive Bigfoot. Always makes me wonder, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a disease. Maybe this one started out as a family unit. One ended up with it, or whatever it brought back had CWD, if that's what it is. And let's say it infected the rest of its family group. And then after that, it just kind of goes on. Now, I know that's not what CWD does, but we don't know what it does in Bigfoot. We're speculating on a speculative animal, so we have no clue. This is just some ideas we're throwing out, right? Something crazy. But the idea of in North Carolina, you send in a military group only to have one of your men snatched up and killed in all this in a battle with Bigfoot. So this is the second story. Well, there's multiple stories, but this is the second one where we have heard of U.S. military getting involved and gunning down the Sasquatch, right? Crazy stuff. It makes me think of an old story. Now, y'all probably remember the Albert Ostman story. Remember where he gave them snuff? It abducted them in his sleeping bag, right? Threw it on his shoulder like a bag of potatoes, carried him off into the woods, whatnot. There was an older story, too, and I know I've talked about it. I don't remember the fella's name, but I know I've talked about it. So I found a little bit of it that talked about a story this man's mother told way back in the day about her father. So this fella's grandfather, this had happened roughly 1916 to 1921, right in that area. He writes that my grandfather and grandmother were Greek immigrants that worked in the fruit canneries in the Central Valley in California. And my grandfather worked many years for the Southern Pacific Railroad doing track maintenance and building railroad track. Now, right there, you start thinking about the dog soldiers, right? Yeah, it's the dog soldiers. Isn't that what it is? With Tom Berenger, where the Native Americans are tucked away in there, right? And they talk about all this. Anyway, this story says that my mother told a story that was refuted by her and her siblings when my grandfather told it. Says these were children of the early 1900s, going to school, all of this stuff. Says my mother told me, says my grandfather was convinced that he was telling this tale primarily because of, like, I guess to entertain kids. But his kids were like, no, this really happened. So this is what went down. The grandfather's working for Southern Pacific, right? He's building tracks up in Northern California along the Oregon border. Now, this is going to be, like we said, early 1900s. Says during this work project, he gets sent on a line camp up in the woods. So they had a base camp that, of course, the crew worked from. And then each week, the work crews would split into 2-man teams, and they would go into these areas clearing logs and clearing the ground out. And at the end of the week, they would go back to base camp, check in, get the rest of their supplies, and then they'd set out after the weekend for another week in the woods. So they're just in there, you know, doing the best they can do as they're staying ahead of the track layers, right? Makes sense. Everything's good. Well, during all this time, one of the 2-man teams comes back to base camp with only one dude. And they said, hey, look, this guy vanished. So the base camp, you know, they go and they look around all that. But these guys, you have to imagine too, 100 years ago, right? So, you know, back up a little over 100 years ago, imagine what it's like up there. Right? Like if you can't see it, who are you going to call to get help? You're going to have to get on horseback out of these mountains and walk or whatnot till you can get somewhere to get up. It may take you a week before you could find anybody to even get up there to help you look. By that time, there's nothing to even be found, right? So they look, nothing. So the next week, jobs, everything still has to be done, right? Like the old joke is that, you know, they'll have your job posting up before your obituary. That's pretty much what this sounds like. This is what's going up. Next week, crews go out. Two-man crews work along the railroad. Of course, they're clearing some stuff up. Not any big deal. Some weeks later, you know, after this camp's moved a little bit more north, the railroad workers come upon this missing man. They find him. Now, he's been gone for a few weeks, right? Here he is. Here's a wild part. He's naked. Guy's naked as the day he was born, crazy out of his mind. And apparently, they found him. He's, you know, I'm sure he was suffering from starvation, exposure, no telling what all. So he passes not long after this, of course, the way the story works out. Story goes that, of course, he was abducted by what he said was a female ape, okay? And that she had a large, this big pit that she kept him in. And that she had, I guess, held him down and licked all the hide off of his feet and hands. So they were raw. So he couldn't climb out. They hurt so bad. Of course, he had sexual contact with her forced upon him, as the story goes. And I guess that's what it was. This is how the story goes. This is what they found. And that's the end of it. That's pretty much where it is. The grandpa says, look, I saw the guy. I knew the guy before he went missing. I knew the guy after we found him. I watched him pass away. We were there. We did all this. Heard him tell the story. Saw his hands. Saw his feet. All of this stuff. This is the way the story goes. He's like, this is what has to happen. I think of that only to jump back into this. If this is truly what happens, and abductions have been going on for quite some time, maybe this is why the military has been getting involved. There's another story that took place actually in Wyoming that didn't spur this fella until after talking to his brother. Get a load of this. It says, let me preface this by saying that I didn't remember this incident until I was in my early 30s. It came back to me over about a week, and this was in bits and pieces. Now, I think it was triggered by my brother who had come to live with us. After a few days of little snippets and memories that kept popping into my head out of nowhere, I finally had to go talk to him about it. And he told me it was all too real, although he didn't know what happened to me until then. He put two and two together and shared his side of the story, which made me realize that I wasn't crazy, nor was I imagining things. See, I grew up on a ranch near the Wind River Mountains in Wyoming. We heated a house with wood, so every year after the crops were in, before we start irrigating, we would spend about 2 weeks in the mountains gathering wood. We always went to the same place. We called it Bear Trap on the Big Sandy River. It was fairly remote because it was long and difficult to drive into the place. The only other people I ever saw there besides my family were sheep herders on horseback. I should also add that I love the outdoors. We spend most of our weekends either in the desert or in the mountains, and I love them both. But for the desert, because I am much more comfortable there, I don't sleep well, if at all. In the mountains, I'm always on edge. For as long as I can remember, I've not been able to go creek fishing without someone else nearby, preferably in sight. And now, of course, I know why. I think it was I was about 5 years old. My brother, the one staying with us, was 12. We'd been camping for about a week, and Mom and Dad went down the mountain or something and left my brother and me up there. Now, it sounds crazy nowadays. And see, I remember standing there watching them drive off next to my brother, who had a .22 rifle propped on his shoulder. After they left, I went to play at my favorite spot by the creek, which is out of sight from camp. It's probably only 200 yards away. Now, I don't know what my brother was doing, and this is what I remember. I do recall being carried by something with long, thin fur under its arm, kind of like a football. There were at least three other beings alongside us, traveling upright and on all fours, intermittently and screaming, yelling at the one who had me. It was like they were telling it to put me down and it was wrong to take me. They seemed to be in a panic. Now, I don't remember smelling anything. It almost feels like I was watching it happen to someone else. See, I don't recall any emotions, like I was basically a passive observer. It doesn't make sense because I know I had been terrified. I didn't like the loud, chaotic noises, though. I don't know how far we went. But finally, we came to a place that was an overhang or a cave. The dirt in front of it had been swept clean. The ones running along beside us had reddish-brown fur and long arms and seemed like they were teenager age and a little younger. They continued to squawk and yell in protest until a much larger one came into view. Then they all went silent and out of sight for some reason. I had the impression she was the matriarch of the bunch. She grunted something at the one holding me, and I was put down on the ground, and it left too. Now, I didn't feel like she was mean or meant to hurt me, just very sad. I wonder if maybe she had lost her own child and snatched me out of grief. The older female looked at me kindly and had a soothing presence. Her fur was darker, almost black, and thinner, and a little wirier. I don't remember if she made any sounds or not, but feel like she continually communicated to me that I was safe and that I shouldn't worry. She took me by the hand and led me to a bed-like thing made out of pine needles, grass, and soft bark, which was right in the inside edge of the cave or overhang. She indicated that I should sit there and was very gentle with me. She disappeared for a short time and came back with some water with plants in it and had me drink it, and then gently laid me on the mat. The next thing I remember, I was waking up, first smelling a damp, mossy dirt smell, and then feeling the grass tickling my nose. I was very confused as to why I'd taken a nap right there. I was about 20 foot away from where I'd been playing. I walked into camp and my brother grabbed me and hugged me and then yelled at me for hiding from him. In retrospect, he was frantic. After I told my brother my side of the story, he told me that he'd been looking for me for hours and that he had checked the area where I'd been playing several times. He also told me that Grandpa and Dad were aware that a family of these beings lived around here, but they had never bothered us. Well, he and my dad used to leave them salt and sugar on a log every year, and they took it every time. I was unable to talk to my dad and my grandpa about it after I remembered because they've both passed. When I was young, I never told my mom about it either. I did hear my grandpa telling my dad about hearing something come up the creek while he was fishing once, and it was no bear. But they stopped talking about it when they realized I was listening. Thanks, T. So, right there, someone completely, and of course, now that's a memory you would probably easily block out. Right? That is something that you would be like, you know what? I don't think so. Especially being young. And then the brother comes to stay with you and then it jogs memories. These are stories that I love, right? These tucked away, hidden memories that you don't know anything about until boom, somebody or something sparks them and you're like, oh, now I do like, jump over here. The idea, and I don't know why this, of these gifting trees, right? Now, if you read anything about the gifting trees, where they're talking about they left salt and sugar for these things, a lot of people online will tell you, a lot of things you read about it, that this is an all-around bad idea. Do not get started gifting these creatures. It's just like giving anything to any other wild animal. They don't understand it the way you do, or the way we would understand it. So there's a lot of stories of people beginning this gifting ritual, of bringing out salt or sugar or rocks or whatever they decide to leave. And then, as people do, the new wears off. You get bored with it. You forget you do it. You stop doing it. Next thing you know, old Mr. Sasquatch and his family, well, they don't forget. And they're beating on your doors. They're banging on vehicles, shaking your houses, doing typical, like, crazy Bigfoot menacing stuff, right, that they don't normally do. That's what they're up to. I'll give you an idea or just a little quick thing. This is a very interesting little story about gifting. It says this first started happening in 2013. The family friend that we all call Joe lives on the outskirts of town, about 5 miles away from the nearest gas station. See, there's quite a bit of forested area, but most of it's private property. And there's a house right across the street from his, so he's not totally isolated. But anyway, one evening, Joe got done picking squash from his garden. He had put them in a bucket, and that he'd left on the porch and basically forgot about it. So the next day, he goes out looking for the squash, realizes that he left outside, right? He's like, oh, man. So he went out on the porch, bucket's gone. He said he didn't really think too much of it. He figured like a raccoon grabbed it, something like that. Look, raccoons, I don't ever see them cutting up squash, do y'all? Said he did find it strange, however, that whatever it was had taken the entire bucket and that none of the squash were spilled out. It was like something had just picked it up and carried it away as opposed to dumping it over like a raccoon was to run off with the squash. So after a few days, Joe came home from work to find a dead mouse on his doorstep. That's really not the weirdest part. It's wrapped in a leaf and tied off in some grass. Says he looked at it for a moment in curiosity. This mouse had been meticulously placed inside the leaf along with grasses, almost like a sandwich. And he then began to think that maybe someone was playing a prank on him, or maybe that there was some witch or something in the woods trying to put a curse or a hex on him. Nothing else happened for about a year, till one night, Joe was sitting in his living room watching television when he saw something out of the corner of his eye through the window. Around in his garden, so he goes, he looks out, and he sees a figure hunched over looking through his squash plants. So he goes outside to confront whoever this is in his garden. When he gets outside, he's surprised by just how little noise this creature's making, like it was trying to hide. It took a step on his porch, causing the wood to creak, and the creature looked up at him. He couldn't get a good look at its face, but there was a distinctive eye shine caused by it looking up towards his porch light. It stood up on two legs, and he got a good look at its body. It was very large and bulky. Now, he estimated it must have been at least 7 feet tall. It was black and hairy and manlike in its form. And as soon as it saw him, it bolted off into the woods with lightning speed. And he says, Joe talks about it barely made any noise. That there's no doubt in his mind that this was a Bigfoot, and Joe understandably had trouble falling asleep that night. So says as he laid awake, he began to wonder if the creature he had just seen had any connection to the mouse he'd received at his doorstep roughly a year ago. And he definitely believed that the thing could carry off a bucket of squash. So the next morning, Joe decides to try a bit of an experiment. This is where it could go wrong, y'all. We talk about this, right? So he took some turkey and rolled it up in a leaf, and he left some grass, much like the mouse had been, and he set it on his picnic table out in the lawn and left for work. When he got back that evening, the turkey leaves and grass were gone. Now, I'm going to stop right there. I don't know where the rest of this story is going to go. We're going to find out, but I'm going to tell you right now. If you just leave lunch meat out and it vanishes, don't instantly think it's Bigfoot, right? Everything's going to eat lunch meat. Birds are going to fly by. You've all seen it. There's videos of horses eating chickens, right? Chickens eating other chickens. Like everything's going to feed on everything. No telling what it might be. Could have been the neighbor's dog. Could have been a stray cat. Could have been just about anything. I'm just saying, let's not jump to conclusions as of just yet unless we see him with like a 6-inch sub. And if we see Bigfoot carrying a 6-inch sub, like then we'll know something's up, right? So here we go. So he puts all this stuff out, he gets it back, he's gone. So he says he studies the area around the picnic table, but he's unable to find anything. Not even the grass had been disturbed, as far as he could tell. Then, as he approached his door, on his doorstep was another mouse. Now, this time, the mouse had no head. Instead, it was just leaves or grass. There was a small pile of berries next to it. Now, he hasn't seen the creature again, but he does believe that it's the one that he's been swapping these gifts with. And it continues, he claims, up until present day, right now, still going on. All right, that's pretty cool. Says he's got a whole deer antler just 4 months ago. Said he set up trail cameras before to try to see if it captures anything, any video of it leaving anything, any of that stuff. Says he's still trying to no avail. Says he does feel like something's always watching him when he's outside and will intentionally not show up when he puts up the cameras. I don't know if this thing's intelligent enough to understand what a trail cam is and that it takes pictures, but it dang sure seems to be. Thank you, LK. So LK dropped that little bit on us with a little bit of the gifting tree. This fellow's got mice he's swapping for turkey bacon, I guess, which is there any better thing to swap for? It's just turkey meat, but I made up the turkey bacon because I hate it. So swap off all the turkey bacon you want if you want a Bigfoot to rip you in half, because I'm sure he's not going to enjoy turkey bacon anyway. So again, Bigfoot's my favorite tales, right? We go from military, we go to some crazy encounters of some possible abductions, all the way back into gifting. So folks, please, please, if you have any stories of gifting, please send them to the show. Email them to us, call them in. I'm very, very curious. We've talked to a few people off air about it, bumped into a few. I'm very, very curious about this whole gifting thing. I know it's not the best idea, but it is funny to think of that they have you now gifting Bigfoot where they also used to gift the Fae. Remember, everybody talks about having a rough time around your house. Leave a little liquor out. Leave a little something out for the Fae. Makes it lean towards the fact that maybe, just maybe, Bigfoot might be Fae. At least I sure like to believe it is. Folks, thank y'all so much for listening. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick Big Fizzy's brain. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back. So there you go. Some stories about some abductions, the U.S. military involved at the beginning, then possible abductions. So again, and of course, then the gifting stumps. It does make me wonder, every time we talk about the missing 411, when the military, whatever government group seems to know a little bit more than they do, is, like I said, I think they might have a little inside knowledge that some of us don't have.
Yeah, you've heard about these secret clandestine groups that are set to assassinate Sasquatches, or they go in whenever they're getting a little too rambunctious, a little too rowdy, a little too close. They have to go in there and they have to terminate them. You've heard of the stories when Mount St. Helens erupted and the fires and the forest fires that happened in California, that this special unit will go and recover the bodies. You hear about this stuff, and it sounds like, oh, that's crazy, that's crazy. But look at all the stuff we've been lied to over the years by our government that's proven years and years later that, that was a lie.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't that be a lie? Like, oh, that's crazy. But then, Stanton Friedman has the actual playbook that shows you for alien body recoveries. He's got the stuff. He's got the things to do. There's been other whistleblowers that have come forward and said the same thing. Bob Lazar talked about reverse engineering. Element 115, before it was even discovered, Moscovium, which is what Element 115 is. Turns out now that that's a real thing. They can create it. Only for a few nanoseconds, but it is real. What's the chances of him inventing that and then it turning out later?
Making something up like that?
Right. Yeah. And then you've had these other, David Grush has come forward with the same thing, that we have like 12 of these craft. We've been reverse engineering. Of course we have. And then you start thinking about the other things. Man, I just sent you some footage the other day. You start looking at these atomic bomb tests. Mm-hmm. You start looking at the way it was filmed and you're like, man, that looks fishy. I never questioned it as a kid, but after looking at it now, you're like, yeah, that don't look quite right. When you start looking at, did we land on the moon? And there's videos where people are saying, well, we can go really far. The farthest we've ever gone is blah, 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 400 miles above the Earth or something. You're like, wait a minute. I thought we've been to the moon. And they totally forgot that we did that. And you're like, yeah, because there's so many people out there saying it's impossible because of the radiation. How could the film that, they took the pictures with even survive the radiation field, yet alone the humans? There's all these things we've been lied to. So I like to think that perhaps there is this special Sasquatch recovery team and they do know about it. And that's why they're not that shocked about it when anybody ends up reporting it to the National Forest Service or things like that. They use the guys that everybody's going to think you're crazy. And that's how they keep it hush hush, is they're able to perpetuate the craziness, right? That's what they did with the UFO sightings back in the day. Well, there's countless people that were like, well, I never said nothing because I didn't want my neighbors to think I was weird. Mm-hmm. I didn't want family members to think I was strange, because they put that stigma out there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just grown over time.
Well, and it's one of those things,
I think,
too.
It's changing now.
Oh, it seems to be, yeah.
Because of television shows and podcasts, people are feeling more comfortable, and also the older generation's dying off.
Well, and it seems to be a little arrogance, too, as we feel like it's real easy to say, I don't know what's in the ocean or I don't know what's in space, but we know exactly what's in the woods. And we might know what's on maybe this level, but you know what I'm saying?
But we know what's in the woods? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's egotistical to just think you do. And we're like, well, maybe there's more there than we know.
Well, and we know a lot, but there's the thing that always sticks with me are these outlier things that you can't study, these one-in-a-lifetime, one-off events that you can't study. You can't recreate it. It's hard to say that person's a liar, right? That person's a liar. That person made it up. Every bit of it's made up. One of the things, whenever you could have these total random events around the world that are actually linked, but you would never know it, right? You would never know. And that's kind of the way the stuff feels with the Fae and all this. So I don't know. I personally believe that there are groups that if and like I said, today I like to believe Bigfoot's real. If it's real, they know about it. They may not be able to keep up with them, track them, do like you're talking
sure.
about. But they know how to find them in certain areas. And then they can also use whatever kind of military equipment that they have to start tracking from satellite, right, until they can find them and drop them right in there on it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot like with the UFO phenomenon. It's something that they know about, they're aware, but they don't know how to control it, and that's what scares them.
Yes.
So they just kind of don't ever talk about it. But they do seem to know when they and where they are certain times.
Well, I've got a story here I need to share with you. Another one that Lon hooked me up with because he knows how much we like to bow hunt. This comes from JB. Now, he writes this back. Happened. Get a load of this. He said, now I've harvested my first 3 bucks with a bow and arrow when I was 13 years old. Took them back-to-back weekends in a row. So he's from Louisiana. This is where this went down.
Word.
Morganzi with Louisiana, all right? And said he had an excellent teacher. His dad and all this stuff taught him all these things, and he'd learned to hunt and all this. So he ended up moving to Colorado, became a guide up there, and then moved to Maryland, and then moved into Pennsylvania. So this is where he's hanging out. He was 51 this year. It says, when I was 17 years old, I was in a tree stand bow hunting about 8 foot off the ground to get to this particular stand. Now, this was off the Mississippi River across the canal. I could hear something huge running towards me. I could hear it when it jumped over the canal and when it landed. Now, what scared me the most was how heavy this thing sounded. And it was definitely bipedal, as if it were tapping on drums from a long distance. So that's what it sounded like running. And it got louder and louder until it stopped in front of me about 50 yards away in a huge thicket before getting real close. I remember standing up on the deer stand to give me more height because I knew what was coming. This thing had to be monumental. Now, through the thicket, I can see it silhouetted at about a 45-degree angle. And it's at least 4 foot wide and I would say 8 to 9 foot tall. Now, I don't know why. Fear, maybe, I guess. But I immediately said, hey, there's someone hunting down here. It immediately snorted and huffed twice, like it was trying to smell me. It then started running again and stopped. Now, I'm frightened out of my mind, so I yell out, that's a good way to get shot. I heard the last stick break, and it was the last thud of its weight. So I jump out of the stand, hit the swamp behind me, wade through all this alligator-infested water to get to the levee so I can get back to town. The only way I could go back was through those woods. Now, I knew that in less than a week, I was going to be moving to Maryland. So me and a buddy decided to camp out 200 yards or more from where this actually happened on the Mississippi River. We did this for 4 or 5 days. We were going to walk along the Mississippi River one night and walk through the swamp and over the levee to a friend of mine's house to watch the movie Friday the 13th. Trying to keep it short, we'll meet 2 more of my friends at this house. We could hear them coming on the levee by 3-wheelers. And we were just about to turn off the Mississippi River to go to this through the swamp when 3 bright lights appeared in the air and everything fell silent, which is remarkable for the swamp at night because, yeah, it was a UFO. Me and my buddy were standing there and I thought we were about to be abducted. This thing was about 50 yards wide, had 3 glowing lights in a triangle formation, not shining on the ground, but just illuminating the treetops. It was on top of a levee 150 yards from us. Now, it was not a light bouncing in the sky a mile away or not a glowing orb, but a huge UFO. I could have thrown a baseball and hit it. It turned in a circle, soared up about 50 feet, and then soared straight up like a lightning bolt. Some people claim that sometimes when Bigfoot sightings occur, there are UFO sightings nearby, but this is where things get weird. Yeah, I believe in Bigfoot 100%. And it's my hope that I will never see one again. And 100% I believe in UFOs, and I hope I don't ever see one of those again either. Now, I can't tell even these stories to my best friend without ridicule. I thought it would be funny if one could just walk up and smack the hell out of him while we were hunting. I think there's something more sinister in these woods, though. Of all the stories I've heard of Bigfoot, I've never heard one make noise in another story like the one did when I heard it. I'm wondering if maybe, just maybe, this thing could have been a dog man. I did not see a snout nor a clear view of the face either. Just wondering. Thanks, JB.
That's the stories, man. That's my favorite part.
Again, in the swamps, right? Down in the swamps, running the across something, and there's that UFO. So for some reason, you get, not all the time, but you get these offshoots of stuff like this happening.
Well, there's a lot of stories of involving Bigfoot and UFOs, you know, strange orbs being seen right before the Bigfoot is seen. And then similar stuff with Dogman. That's true as well. I don't know. Is there a connection? Like we always joked about before, perhaps the Dogman or Bigfoot is the extraterrestrial's pet, and they're making a pit stop on Earth, and they're letting him out to use the bathroom or whatever, stretches legs.
Gets his collar off,
then they gets back on board the spaceship, and they keep going wherever they were going in the first place, right?
Might be, yeah.
I'd like to think that that is the case. Speaking of strange and cool, don't forget, if you want to see me and Cam, we're going to be appearing September 2nd and 3rd in Fort Worth, or White Settlement technically, but it's Western Fort Worth, at the Paranormal Roundtable's second annual Dogman Cryptid Conference. There's going to be lots of cool speakers there, like Nick Redfern, Ken Gerhard, Josh Turner, Lyle Blackburn, Christopher Garantano, and David Weatherly, and a lot more. And me and Cam are going to be there. You can share your stories with us. You can just talk to us. Love to meet all of y'all. I'll put links to this to the conference in the show notes, but you can just Google it, Paranormal Roundtable Second Annual Dogman Cryptid Conference, or you can go to Eventbrite, that's the website, and you can purchase your tickets today. It's going to be coming up. It's going to be here in just a little over a month, Cam. I'm getting super psyched
about
it. It'll
be a good time. I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time. If you have any cool stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, as well as the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Let's not forget about our fantastic sponsors. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go to drinkag1.com/EXPANDED. That's drinkag1.com/expanded. And ExpressVPN. Stop letting strangers invade your online privacy. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/EXPANDED. Use the link expressvpn.com/expanded to get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/expanded.
And folks, last but certainly not least, our friends at Lumi Labs, folks. You want to learn about microdosing? You want to get really into it and figure more of it out? Go to microdose.com. Use the show code expanded. There you're going to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. You'll be able to find the links for everything. Look, it's available nationwide, y'all. Go to microdose.com. Use the show code expanded for free shipping and 30% off your first order.
That's about all the time we have for this episode of Expanded Perspectives. Please be safe out there. Until next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.